Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to talk about Christianity, and we're going to talk about specifically religion. We're doing a series. We're about in the 11th section of that series, and we're revealing a great deal of stuff that people thought they knew about and are finding out that they didn't know as much about it as they thought, that they believed. And in the last session, we talked about this idea of religion and how lexicographers have changed the definition of the word religion. Now, we don't want to really just blame them or the tyrants of the world that might be doing this, but are behind this kind of advantage that comes when you change the definition of words. Because the responsibility really lies with us. We allow the word to be changed in our own minds, and this is something that repeats itself over and over again in history. And those of you who have read the book, Thy Kingdom Come, see that this idea of the altars of stones, a gathering of stones was a gathering of friends, men you trusted, and they had a particular job. And they fit together without being hewn, without being regulated. And when you gave your sacrifice on those living altars, you gave them for a purpose. And you gave them up entirely. They were burnt up to you. And then this was a way in which society bound itself together by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty, so that society would remain free. Now, you wouldn't know that with the modern interpretation of the Old Testament, that have twisted the meaning of words, yet the words are still there. And one of the beautiful things about Hebrew language is that the words are based on letters put together, much as the ideograms of Chinese and Japanese, so that the letters themselves have meaning in the words. And when you once you understand the meaning of those letters, and you can think left brain, right brain, you can go back and read the original language and you say, well, this word has to do with this, or this word has to do with that. And these are concepts, and the order of the word, letters in the word tell you something about what the author is trying to say. And so when men come along and try to twist those words to mean something else, and often, you know, they're not always twisting them to mean something else. In the Hebrew language, they would always have a metaphorical meaning to a word as well as a substantive meaning to a word, such as reins, the reins of control of something. To be able to control something was the same word for kidney. Kidney was associated with reins of control, and the same word for liver is the same word for to fatten or enrich. And of course, if your liver is unhealthy, you're not going to be getting fat. You're going to actually probably be getting skinny, or you might get puffy, but you're not going to be well. And so the fact that they have the same word for these two different meanings, one is an actual physical liver you can hold in your hand and it's a physical object, and the other is this idea of fatten or enrich. And that's why they say, honor thy father and thy mother. That word honor is the word liver. And the word kidney, when you give the kidney to the Levite, it is the word for reins of control. So you're not giving the kidney of your sacrifice, you're giving the reins of control of your sacrifice to the Levites. And just as in some languages, the words for money had to do with something that was considered commonly of value in that community, in that lifestyle. Sheep were considered of value. So when you're giving, they talk about giving sheep, because at first they were only shepherds. And that was where all the value. You had 10 sheep, you were so wealthy. If you had 100 sheep, you were so much more wealthy. So sheep represented wealth in idea, in concept, as well as in reality. And so this affects the language as well. And when they're trying to give you, you go back to, I don't know if it's Life of Brian or whatever it was, but or the Holy Grail or whatever, one of the John Cleese's deals where these guys are standing way off listening to the Sermon on the Mount, and they hear Jesus say the part where he says, "Blessed are the peacemakers," and they can't quite hear, and it sounded like he said, "Blessed are the cheesemakers." And he says, what does that mean? I don't get what that means. And then, of course, somebody standing by, I believe it was John Cleese, is going to explain it. And so he begins to explain it, and you think he's going to explain it. He's not saying cheesemakers. He's saying peacemakers. But no, he says, he doesn't mean cheesemakers. He means the manufacturers of all dairy products. And so you realize that, well, the first guy got it wrong because he didn't hear it right. The second guy got it wrong because he's an idiot. And this is what we do when we go about trying to figure out the sacred scriptures. Sacred scriptures have been inspired by the spiritual sacredness of the Creator of God. Wherever you find those. And the Bible may not be the only sacred scriptures. There may be a lot of others. You know, obviously we're His holy church, so we're going to focus on the Bible. But we're going to take a look at it from a spiritual point of view, because I don't believe you can understand the revelations of the Bible without personal revelation yourself. There is so much distortion and lies and twistings out there that you cannot understand the Bible without divine revelation. People say it interprets itself. Well, no, language is such a big part of interpreting what you're reading. And then knowing the history of the time and what they were talking. If you didn't know who Caesar was, if you didn't know he was the emperor of Rome, and they talk, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, maybe you think they're talking about some guy down the street who runs a pizza parlor. I mean, you have to have peripheral knowledge, knowledge of the time, knowledge of the error, knowledge of the language, in order to read the Bible and understand what the authors were meaning. And I believe that you have to have knowledge of the Holy Spirit in order to understand that. And there's a great many people out there preaching what they believe is the gospel, and they don't have the knowledge of the Holy Spirit. And so they twist and they turn peacemakers into cheesemakers, then cheesemakers into the manufacturer of all dairy products. I mean, they get so far away from the simplicity of the gospel that, and there are people out there actually saying that that Paul preached a different gospel than Christ, a different gospel than the apostles. Even though the apostles talk about, you know, Peter anyway, talks about Paul being one of the brethren, and he's going to talk to you about things that are difficult to understand. He knew what Paul was saying. Yeah, and there was, we see the adjustment in their own thinking as they begin to re-examine in prayer, seeking that divine revelation, which we will probably get to in either the end of this show or the next show, is talking about what divine will is. How do you know what the divine will is? Just read the Bible. Lots of people read the Bible and they come up with different conclusions. So, and some of them are very smart people. But it's not given unto them to know what is written there, what is really being said there, because they don't have Christ in their heart. That anointing of the Father in their heart, that divine inspiration. That's what Jesus says he's going to build his church on. Not Peter himself, but what made Peter, but Simon, what made Simon a Peter, a rock. He knew this not because flesh and blood had revealed it to him. Well, if it's not flesh and blood who's revealed it to you, who did reveal it to you? Spirit. Divine revelation. And he says, upon that divine revelation, I will build my church. So I'm going to talk to you about a lot of facts, a lot of information, a lot of things you're not going to hear anywhere else. But I'm not trying to establish what I say as an authority in your mind. I'm just giving you these facts to help you with your unbelief, because you see the truth. Some of you see the truth and you believe, but then you think, but what about all the stuff I was taught? What about all the stuff they told me? What about what my parents said and my teacher said and my pastor said? You see, they lead you to unbelief. Woe unto them. And so I have to show you that what they said is not really true, because you didn't really have the definition. They didn't have the definition, because they didn't know the history, because they didn't know the language, the times. And so they fed you a gospel that was twisted and turned and false and leads to destruction and damnation. And so I'm not going to teach you the gospel. God will teach you the gospel, but I'll show you the lie. I have to tear down the strongholds of the mind that have been built up by false teachers in you, so that you can see the light. I have to let the light in, because you cannot see it, because darkness covers your mind with false information. So anyway, we said in the first part of the series, we showed you how this word religion was hijacked by these lexicographers and from the time of the Constitution. Because at the time of the Constitution, the definition of the word religion was much different than it is today. Today, it's a set of beliefs. 100 years ago, it was an outward act that expressed your belief in God or gods. And the definition today, it's a set of beliefs concerning a superhuman agent or agencies. And they don't even mention the word God in the definition. Not nowhere in the definition. This is the definition of religion. They don't even mention God. And they say the idea of a moral code, it may be a part of religion, but it doesn't have to have even a moral code. That's the modern definition. But 100 years ago, it was an outward act by which you showed that you believed in a God or gods. But you go back 100 years before that, and the definition of religion at the time of the writing of the Constitution of the United States, primary definition, is the performance of our duty to God and our fellow man. So that's much different. You know, when you go to church and you sing and you praise and you wave your hands in the air, how are you performing the duty to God and your fellow men? You call that a religious service, but it's not performing a duty to God or your fellow men. So it's not really service to anybody, but yet it's become a religious service, because religious doesn't mean the performance of your duty to God and your fellow men anymore. It just means what you think. As a matter of fact, you can save yourself by thinking a thought. You think Jesus has saved you. You think that Jesus is God and that there's a Trinity or whatever it is that your religious group is telling you to think, and you're saved. They'll say to you, you're saved now because you've accepted Jesus as your personal Savior. You don't know who he is or what he said or what he thought your duty of to the Father, to the Creator was, and your duty to your fellow man was. You don't even know what that is. Don't even know what that looks like. You don't know how to perform that without using a gun or a spear or a sword. And yet you think you believe in Jesus and you think you're saved because they gave you a set of beliefs and they said that's what religion is, a set of beliefs. No, religion is doing. And that's why Jesus said, not those who say, Lord, Lord, but those who doeth the will of the Father. Not those who say they accept me as their personal Savior, but those who doeth the will of the Father. Do you earn your salvation by your works where God owes you? No. You still is by grace, but this is how you know whether or not you've really accepted Jesus, by your works. This is how you know them, by their works. They tell you this. I'm just pointing out what they're saying, but a lot of your churches are missing this. And they're missing the aspects of what Jesus said. What is the will of the Father? Isn't the will of the Father to not covet your neighbor's goods? Yes, it is. That's the will of the Father. Right reason tells us that. And there's a reason why I use the phrase right reason. We'll get to that later. The several elements in the First Amendment where we find the word religion. So what is the First Amendment? First Amendment to the Constitution 200 years ago when the word religion meant something different. Do you know what the definition of that religion was back then? It was your duty. What you do in performance of your duty. Congress says, or the Constitution says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Now, I've never seen a successful petitioning of the government for redress of grievances. Mostly I see people giving government more and more power because they ask the government to do what they should be doing for themselves. And that brings about something called devolution, which we will get to later. So this respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, and religion was the performance of your duty to your fellow man. So they can't make any laws that make you perform your duty to your fellow man. And what would that duty be? I mean, if clearly, Jesus talks about the Good Samaritan who helps out somebody in need. Clearly, the Bible is talking about helping out widows and orphans in need of your society. Clearly, that was done through charity. You made an offering to help out somebody. Taking care of your parents. Honor thy father and thy mother. Fatten, you know, liver thy father and thy mother. Like we talked about, that's the word there. Do you see? Honor is the word liver, which means also to fatten. To enrich thy father and thy mother. Because the father and thy mother is the head of thy household. Even when you go out and get married, who do you ask permission to get married from? Your father. And then he gives you permission, in a frank marriage, you go get married, now you're husband and wife, but your father is still your father. He can't rule over your husband and wife relationship, but if something were to happen, you would go back to your father and say, I have a need. And your father would talk to your brothers and the rest of the family and say, they have a need here. Can we help them out? My son is sick. My son is killed in war. We have to help his widow. We have to help his children. And the family would do that. But if the family had broken down so much that it couldn't do it, then you have to go to the community who is peaceably assembling. What does it mean to peaceably assemble? That means to assemble in peace. Like the righteous king of peace, Melchizedek, who helped out, fed, brought bread and wine, and helped those that were hungry and needy. And where did he get this bread and wine? It was given to him. People tithed to him. They chose to give to him so that he would have the means by which to help out the needy of his society. And who did he help out? He helped out men like Abraham. Because he saw men like Abraham helping others, going to the aid of others, defending justice and righteousness for others, not just for himself. And so Melchizedek came and blessed him with his gifts. You think that when you go give money to a food shelter or you know, a food kitchen or something like that, you say, I'm giving to the needy. And I am being charitable. No, you're not. Not necessarily. You may be, but maybe you're not. We had an incident just the other day, 2 days ago. We were in a town not too far from here. Well, 100 miles from here. That's not too far in this country. That's the closest big town. 100 miles. And we were parked trying to get a hold of people about purchasing a hay rake. and a water tank for watering roads to prepare for the Burning Bush Festival. And we got the hay rank, but we didn't get the tank. But we did experiments yesterday with another tank that we had. We just need to get more capacity, and we've got a plan for that. But we saw a man laying under the shade of a tree with his dog, reading a book. And he was just sitting nearby, and we were making our calls and figuring out what we were going to do. And all of a sudden, during this period, he got up and walked over to one of these homeless guys you always see on the corner, at that particular corner, waiting for people who come out to the traffic, and they stop for a second, and some people give the poor homeless guy money, and he stands there looking homeless and dejected and a little bit tattered clothes, and sometimes with a sign, "I'm a vet, help me out, I'm camping, I need," but it'd be different people there at different times. Well, this guy who came up with his dog, he was the different person. He took over, and the guy who had been standing there went over to another tree and sat in the shade in some lawn chairs with some other guys. They are actually taking shifts, one guy at a time. And now it was this guy who had been laying in the shade of the tree reading a book. Now it's his time to look dejected and homeless. And I see people stop there and hand them money. "I'm helping the poor." Who are these guys who take shifts, who actually have, "Oh, it's my hour to be here at the corner begging money." And then another, and they meet and they divvy up what they get, supposedly. That's what I'm told. And I've seen that. I have friends who have also seen this, where they, when they're done, they go and get in nice cars and drive away. It's a costume. They're conning you out of your money. They have designated corners, and they have hours that they are supposed to be there and take over for the next guy. They're working this, you guys, while they're probably, don't have evidence of this, but I have reasonable suspicion, we'd like to investigate it, they're probably working the system too. Maybe they're SSI, is that what they call it? They on permanent disability or whatever. They're already getting a check and getting food stamps. This is just how they get extra cash. And it would be too boring to sit there all day, you know, 10 hours a day. And so they have different guys that come there. I tell you, when you give them 10 bucks, you are not giving to the poor. And there is no reward in heaven for what you're doing. You are irresponsibly giving to people who are the slothful of society. You need to be wiser in your charity, in your religion, in the way in which you take care of the needy and fulfill your obligation to your fellow man. Because you're not fulfilling that obligation to your fellow man. The people who really need help, they're not on that street corner. They're not taking turns. They don't have a schedule that they've worked out. They really need help. And you don't even know who they are, because your ministers are more interested in their big screen TV and building their congregation and playing religion than doing real religion. Instead, they have led you into devolution. There's that word again. Do you know what that means, devolution? We were playing with another word last week that I like so much, and for some reason it's escaping me right now. But what is it again? Oh, pignoration. There it is. I was getting the wrong letter and I couldn't get the word. But pignoration, yeah, that was our word for last week. And you'll have to go back in the archives and listen to the other shows to find out what that means. We're going to go to a break in a minute, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what divine will is, what divine law is, and what the early Americans were talking about when they talked about it and when they talked about religion, and see that what you think religion is today is not what religion was yesterday and not at the time of Christ. And we'll be back to Keys of the Kingdom and look at that and devolution. Thank you.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, "God bless America," and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth, as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. And if you went to look up the word definition for the word devolution, which we're talking about, which really is what the book Covenants of the Gods is really about, although it never uses that word, because there's lots of other words that you could use as well. But I like the word devolution, just like I like the word pig narration. Pig narration sounds like pig, P-I-G, narration. But it doesn't have anything to do with a pig. It has to do with a promise. It has to do with a pledge. It has to do with an oath, which are all words that are similar in nature, that are expressing the same concept. And eventually in the series, we're going to get around and show you how this is what Jesus was talking about. This is why he says, and James says, above all else, stop the taking of oaths. Stop the taking of these pledges. Stop creating these binding agreements. What agreements should you have with unbelievers? Unbelievers in what? Unbelievers in peace. They don't believe in peaceably assembling. You think that a democracy is a peaceful assembly? A democracy is not a peaceful assembly. A democracy is where 51% of the people can take away the rights of the other 49. Because they're a democracy. They are ruled by the mob. Rather than, you know, what was the line from the movie Patriot? Why do I want to trade one tyrant 3,000 miles away for 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away? You know, that's democracy. And that's, of course, why democracy was so unpopular amongst early Americans. It was so unpopular even until 1927 that it was referred to as a bad form of government in your military training manuals in 1927. But by 1945, it became a good form of government that you should die for. How did it do that? Somebody just changed the definition. They said, well, it doesn't mean that anymore. Now it means this. This is a powerful, powerful ability that you have given somebody else because you have not taken the time to be diligent in your studies. You believe what you were told, like a child being told about Santa. Learn from that lesson. Don't be deceived. Here, I'll give you a bunch of definitions of devolution. One is, if you go to the London Sonoma educational essay in the glossary, it talks about devolution being a reversal of evolution, a return to past forms. Devolution. There's actually scientists that are, you know, most of your cows actually come from a wild bovine that lived in northern Germany at one time. And it was an impressive, muscular creature, horned and you know, rather dangerous probably at that time because it was wild. I mean, it would attack wolves and survive in difficult times. And it did so more by its ability to destroy its opponent. And fend off the dangers, you know, of a ravenous dog-eat-dog environment of the North Woods. They're actually in the process of trying to get back, because they're all extinct, they're trying to get back to that creature by crossbreeding existing animals to bring out the characteristics of that original one. They'll find, you know, they'll breed a whole herd and they'll see, okay, this one shows some of the characteristics of that past breed of bovine. And so they'll take that one to a selection or herd process. And they cull the ones that look domestic. See, for years they culled the ones that were wild and ferocious until they ended up with a Holstein dairy cow. And that's selective breeding because of this combination in genetics. Well, they've been trying to breed it back to bring back that originally bullocks that was this wild cow that looks like something, you know, out of Spartacus. I mean, they're a very impressive animal, but they're not a domestic cow. But anyway, so that's one definition, reversal of evolution, go back to the way something else, the way it existed before. Okay, another term is continuing the process of degeneration or breaking down in contrast to evolution. So now that's a little different. They're saying it's in contrast to evolution, they're breaking down or degenerating. Well, in the case of producing the bullocks, they're producing a very impressive animal. It's just not a domesticated animal. It probably still has some of the domestic characteristics because it is still probably in a pen. They don't have it out there fighting wolves off. And so it's not going to turn on those ancient DNA genetics that made it what it really was. But it's starting to look more like the ones that they used to exist. But here, this definition says it's actually a degeneration in contrast to evolution, which is supposedly an improvement, if evolution was really true. You know, evolution is not, you're not really evolving by taking dogs and breeding dogs to, and saving all the fastest dogs until you have a dog that can really run fast. It's not evolution, as they are insinuating, where you know, a dog becomes a cat, or a cat becomes a bird, or, you know, whatever. That's, you're changing whole species rather than developing. And of course, that's really what Darwin talked about mostly at the beginning, this idea of evolution, was that because of environment, you know, animals would change. And that this lizard over here is related to this one over here, but this one's real small because of diet, because of where it lived. They survived better if they were smaller. And this one over here survived better because it put on fat or whatever, because it had a different environment. And that's real. That's not really evolution of species to species. It's still the same species. It's just certain traits are turned on. Anyway, back to another. Devolution is the delegation of authority and duties in the later 20th century, the movement to decentralize governmental power in Scotland and Wales, in the UK. A bill for the creation of the Scottish Welsh Assembly was introduced in 1976 and rejected by the referendums in Scotland and Wales in 1979 in the labor movement. Well, that devolution, that word was used way later, and it's actually, it's an idea of decentralizing power, which is kind of interesting, because most of what you see in history of devolution is the centralization of power. But they're actually using devolution to talk about decentralizing power, to go back to where there was a less central government. So it's not that that word is wrongly used there, it's used differently. It shows you that depending on when and where and who is using a word, it may have a different definition. Another definition of devolution is the delegation of powers to other parliamentary bodies within the UK, specifically the Scottish Parliament or the Welsh and the Northern Ireland assemblies, which could be a decentralization, or it could be a centralization of power if the source of that delegation is, say, the people. And this is the important aspect of that word. If the king, who has supposedly all the power, is delegating power to these other assemblies, or if you know, the Parliament of the UK is delegating some of its power and saying, now the Scottish Parliament and the Welsh Parliaments will take care of it, they're decentralizing. But like I said, most of the time that word is used in the centralization of power. But so where does power come from in government? It comes from the people, because the people were created by God and delegated certain powers by God. And whether you believe in God or not, power still comes from the people. They create the nations. They create the governments. They give power to governments. Governments did not create people. People created people before governments existed. So all power comes from the people. And if they delegate their personal power to the government, then they have centralized power. And by definition, that is devolution. But there are more definitions to the word devolution. And one of them is as a noun in illegalexplanation.com. The definition of devolution is through the automatic operation of law, a transfer of title to real property. Now, the interesting word there is automatic operation of law, the transfer of title to real property. Automatic. You do something automatically, power is transferred. You don't have to decide to transfer the power. You just do this, power is automatically transferred. Second definition in the same location is the transfer from one person or government to another of rights, powers, or public or private office. transfer of one person to or a government to another of rights. Now, since all rights begin in the individual, the office of man. Now, let's make that. Now, that's, people don't like office. Office is a person. But, and we'll see later in some definitions of natural liberty, that the office of man, that's what you are, man, mankind, whether woman or man, that office has powers granted to it by its creator. And a man can take the powers of those office and delegate it to another. But if he does certain things, it can automatically be delegated to another, and that's called devolution. In ecclesiastical law, devolution is defined. And, you know, we have this in the article that will be associated with this, these recordings, one of which has already gone out to News of Views, will be published shortly, and then a second one that's still in process, is devolution. The transfer or forfeiture, that's that automatic word, of a right and power which a person, we're all persons, we're either members of society or members of a corporate society, and people don't want to be a person because a person is a member, but by being alive, you are a member of mankind. So that would make you a person in that sense. And that's why I use that word, office of mankind. That's a good place to be. That's a good office. But you can forfeit your rights automatically out of that if you do certain things or fail to do certain things. Anyway, of a right or power which a person has to another on account of some act or negligence of the person who is vested with such right or power. For example, when a person has a right of preceptation. Now, there's a word that's really hard to find the definition of, preceptation, preceptation. You can find some medical definitions of it, but here it is, found in Bouvier's, and you can't find the definition of that word today anywhere. It's like wiped off the face of the earth. But anyway, a little bit of the context will help us understand it. And he does not present. He has a right of preceptation, but he does not present within the time prescribed. The right devolves on his next immediate superior. Now, that in the operation of that is the bondage which you are now suffering under. The loss of freedom that you are now experiencing is all based on this idea of devolution. And the remedy is in preceptation, which you cannot find the definition of anywhere. If somebody finds a good definition, send me the source of that word. Because I think that's interesting that since a word found in Bouvier's, you can't find a definition of. But anyway, the transfer or forfeiture of a right and power which a person has to another. The power you have to another. The right and power. Power is the power of choice. The right of choice. So we've talked about the word excusia in the book Higher Liberty, which I recommend everybody read, free online on our website. Let every man remain subject to the higher power, higher right, higher liberty of choice. You have a right to choose. The Good Samaritan had a right to choose to help that man. If he failed to do it, it would fall to the next. And it would fall to the next. And this is what's happened. What is religion? Religion is the right and responsibility and the performance of your obligation to God and your fellow man. You have an obligation to your fellow man to care about his rights, his life, his liberty, as much as you care about your own, his welfare, as much as you care about your own. You have that responsibility, and with that responsibility comes a right. But if you fail to do it, if you fail to fulfill that right, that responsibility, that obligation, that duty to your fellow man within a time prescribed by reason, the right devolves on his next immediate superior. Who is your superior? Who is the supreme agent of your life? It's the government. The governments you have created. They take care of the widows and orphans and needy of your society because your churches are too busy singing. You don't do it through free will offerings. You don't do it through faith, hope, and charity. You don't do it through the perfect law of liberty. So you have devolved into a state where liberty is not readily available to you. You don't have your inalienable rights, and we're going to talk about that and explain to you why, so that you can put this together. But this process of losing your rights through failure of talking about and acting upon religion, which is the fulfillment of your obligation to your fellow man, not what you think, not a set of beliefs about trinities and bhagwans and Buddhas and what have you. That's not really, that's what religion has come to mean in your mind today, but they changed the definition of the religion and you helped them do it. You have devolved the definition of religion and you have devolved yourselves because you failed to meet your responsibilities to another. You did not join with Abraham and were swept away. You did not join with Moses and remained in Egypt. You did not take back your responsibilities, therefore you cannot have your rights back. We're going to talk about the many different ways in which you can lose and do and neglect. You see, it says on account of some act or negligence of the person who is vested with such right or power or responsibility. And we all have a responsibility to care about our neighbor's rights. And if we don't, we will lose our own. This is quantum. This is something you cannot change. You can have all the opinions about it you want, but it will not change. If you will not set your neighbor free and take back your responsibilities, you will not be free. And setting your neighbor free and forgiving your neighbor and taking back your responsibilities to yourselves and to your neighbor, not just for yourself, but for your neighbor, is essential to be a free society. And that, my friends, is what religion used to mean, is to do that. And that's why the churches used to be the totality of the social welfare of society. They are not anymore because Congress has made laws accepting the establishment of religion like Social Security, SSI, welfare, even unemployment. This is how you take on your responsibility to your fellow man. And the government does it, not you. The government does it. You have given them the power of choice, the right and responsibility of taking care of the needy. And that is why you are not free today. Because you have devolved in a process of devolution away from your rights. And even though those inalienable rights still exist, they don't necessarily exist for you. Because you've gone back into bondage. And we're going to show you how that process works in the next show. Because it's just going to take too much time to do it in this show. So anyway, that's a look at devolution, which I promise you that we would look at. And also, one of the ways, you know, like I said, this can come about through some act or negligence as an automatic forfeiture of right and power. Or it can be done by transfer. And that transfer is that process of pignoration, where you become a pignation. For as in an absolute government, the king is law. This is Thomas Paine. He says this, and we're going to talk about this again in the next show. So in free countries, the law ought to be king, and there ought to be no other. But now when I say law, what are you thinking? The law. You're thinking, you know, the statutes, you know, don't go over 55 miles an hour, pay this tax, you have to send your kids to school, you have to get these shots, you know, whatever the rule is, I don't know. There's a million of them. Yeah, you are under the law. You're under those millions of law. You're not under the laws of Moses. You're under those millions of laws that your government now creates. Moses was a government, and he created a government that required you to take back your responsibilities, and then you would remain free. When you turned over your responsibilities to the government again under Samuel, you were no longer free again. And you should be able to throw off those chains that bind you, unless, of course, there is something else involved called debt. Debt brings you into bondage. And we'll expound on that. But it says, as Thomas Paine goes on to say, and this is in Common Sense, but lest any ill use should afterwards arise, let the crown, he's talking about crowning the law, let the crown at the conclusion of the ceremony be demolished and scattered amongst the people whose right it is. Another way to say that, whose responsibility it is. You have a responsibility to take care of the needs of your neighbor, if they are true needs. Those guys on the street corner I talked about at the beginning of the show who take turns pretending to be the forlorn beggar, who are probably already getting checks and money and don't need to do this, who can lay casually in the shade while you struggle to make a living, and then go over and look like they're actually providing a service for the weak-minded. Weak-minded, they hand them $5, $10, a buck out the window, and they think, oh, I did my good deed for the day. And it alleviates their conscience. Meanwhile, they send their kids to public school at their neighbor's expense. They take health care that somebody else is caring for their parents through a bankrupt system. But they gave $10 to the guy in the corner who didn't need it anyway. Meanwhile, somebody who really needs it is dying somewhere with nobody with them. Because all your ministers are too busy singing in the church saying, you're saved! Because you believe in Jesus. But they're not doing the will of the Father. They don't know Him. They are workers of iniquity. And Jesus is going to tell them, get ye from me. I know you not. So anyway, we'll go back and look a little bit at some of this other stuff in the First Amendment. Because it doesn't just talk about religion. But first of all, that the restrictions on the people in this system of the First Amendment is on government, not upon the people. But the government has established religion. They just call it Social Security. And we're going to show you not only how that all works, but how you can turn around and go the other way when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom. Till then, God bless. Peace be upon your house.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.